want to take a trip through history's major events or explore interesting geographical features and even some interesting scientific developments, well, join us on My Sunday Morning Take every Sunday morning from 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. where we look into everything history, everything geography, a little bit of science, and everything else to help you understand what is happening in the world. You're now listening to My Sunday Morning Take, the show where we dive into everything history, everything geography, a little bit of science, and everything else in between to help you make sense of how it works around you from 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. every Sunday.
Yeah. Right there, as the sounds of the song by the same name with the same artist, Loaded Honey, actually, you know, ends it off right there, or has its particular sort of like end there in terms of where you and I get to engage the listeners here on another session of my Sunday morning take here on your number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM. And the song before it was obviously, you know, I've got a few favorite artists, specifically like Jamiroquai. It's not the guy. Jamiroquai is not the guy. He's just the face of the band. The band's name is Jamiroquai. They're an acid jazz, funk jazz, setup. One of the few left in the world, specifically who still primarily use the variations of jazz ultimately, which sound a little bit poppy, but it's not. If you listen to it, it has a completely different identity to it. But nonetheless, Jamiroquai there with the song Automaton, as you know, as it comes from the exact, from the album also with the exact name, Automaton. Now, bringing us into the sort of like the start of this morning's particular discussion, dear listeners, we have a look at one of the most important categories of geography, and this specifically has to do with knowing the lay of the land, as well as also the development of the most influential and historical piece of documentation that actually helps you navigate a land, which is, yes, you guessed it, a map. We've with the developments, obviously, of now you having something like GPS, which is known as Global Positioning Tracking Systems or Global Positioning Systems, you still have an aspect of a map being represented on your smart device, specifically on your smartphone, because so many of us, and specifically those of us who have driven with many of these e-hailing or these ride-hailing platforms where they make use of a map or they need a map to navigate to a street, specifically if the client is waiting in a particular street that the driver does not know. A map has been always one of the best indicators primarily of this a direction to follow and how to navigate to get to the destination you wish to achieve. And maps, if you did not know, guys, and for those of you who lost out on reading maps, maps are literally like history books, and maps are the best history books that you can actually know about the real world, specifically what they would call natural history. Natural history is literally encompasses the subject matter of geography. I'm a fan of geography. Obviously, I didn't get into the geology part, obviously, because you see where Dwight is. Dwight is on the more human history aspect. But I'm also a fan of geography, as I highlighted. And with geography, there is a subcategory within geography itself that looks at map development. And this morning's particular engagement here between yourself and myself, we will be looking at some of the oldest maps, primarily in terms of that some of these maps technically were drawn without the author of the map, or if you can call them an author slash an artist, because a cartographer has to be someone that has to correlate information that was explained to them, or if they were there, they have to correlate description, information, as well as the description is also information, but additional information in terms of the exact indentations of a coastline or the exact, curvatures, the existence of bays, the existence of landmarks that you would not know of if you had not been there to survey the particular landmark, to identify and describe and literally draw a map of a continent that potentially the person might not even have been there in human history. But it's also part of the many things that I've realized and have come to realize in the past 2 weeks. I've been watching a whole bunch of these, compiled or developed, videos that sometimes give me hints in terms of go look there, Dwight, go look there. But it's also a scenario of looking at the quality of the information, because I could literally look up all the maps specifically that this particular talking point that gave me this particular subject matter to look into. And it has been described that most of the maps that I'm going to share with you today is that all the cartographers, that's the author and the artist of a map is a cartographer, all the cartographers were not in the destinations where of how they drew and described the maps. I'll say it again. Most of these cartographers, actually all of them, were not in the destination to survey nor to technically see and draw and write said particular map. We start off specifically with two particular maps, and we're going to look into cartography in its existence in terms of the contribution that cartography obviously has played to human history, and specifically to us humans. But these sets of maps, all of them, I've got four different, no, not four, I've got five, yes, I've got five here. I've got 5 ancient maps. Primarily, they were drawn... most of them are drawn from European particular cartographers. Two of them were drawn by... the one was commissioned by a European leader from a Arabic scholar at the time. This was in the 1100s, because the king who commissioned this particular map was a Sicilian king, from the island of Sicily. He commissioned it from an Arabic scholar. From North Africa or from the Middle East. And it is known as the Tabula Rogeriana. The Tabula Rogeriana is described as being one of the oldest, most accurate maps specifically depicting unique geographic locations on the African continent. The Tabula Rogeriana also was specifically a kind of a gift to another king. It was something elaborate that the king of Sicily wanted to have in order to give to, a fellow king in terms of impressing this other monarch with a particular gift in terms of saying, hey, listen, hey, dude, to make you feel good, I want to give you a special gift. Look what I commissioned as a gift for you. And it is... a specific map, dear listeners, that actually is profound. Yes, if you look at it today, the particular map itself, if you had the opportunity to go look at the copy that exists of the map. So the map's actual name is known as the map of the Al-Maghrib Al-Aqsa and Al-Maghrib Al-Awsat, the South Up. It is the oldest known surviving manuscript copy of this gentleman who drew it, the author and who wrote about it, Muhammad al-Idrisi. And this known copy obviously is one that highlights specifically the detail of the particular map. Now, its actual name is known as the Nuzat al-Mushtaq fi Iktiraq al-Afaq. That's the name of the actual map that was commissioned by this Sicilian king. Its literal translation is the excursion of one eager to penetrate the distant horizons, which was commonly known in the West as the Tabula Rogeriana, meaning the Book of Roger in Latin. And it is technically an atlas that was commissioned by the Norman king Roger II in 1138 and completed by the Arab geographer Muhammad al-Idrisi in 1154. Now, the atlas compiles of 70 maps of the known world with associated descriptions and commentary of each specific location by al-Idrisi. Now, here's where things get interesting. With this particular atlas, and if you've never seen an atlas, I'm really sorry. I am really sorry. I don't know if I still have that book, but I've got an atlas that was given to me, an atlas of Namibia. It's the most influential piece of information ever in the history of this country. Actually, I think the book was knocked by someone. I'll have to ask my sister if she took my book. But anyway, so an atlas will explain to you everything about Namibia, and specifically that one that I've got. It'll explain to you everything about the subject matter at hand. An atlas will include people, cultures, trade routes even, geography, the fauna and the flora, and even give you, insight in terms of extra additional information regarding how long have people been here, how long have certain animal species been here, so on and so forth. And all these sets of information gives you the 360 degree, view of the particular place, the geographic location that you'll be stepping into. Now, around 1138 specifically with this map, the Tabula Rogeriana, The Norman king of Sicily, Roger II, invited al-Idrisi, who was a Muslim geographer, to his court in Palermo in search of help pursuing his particular political agenda at the time. Now, Sicily's vibrant multicultural environment had led al-Idrisi to accept the king's invitation to his court, and during this particular meeting, al-Idrisi briefed Roger II on his familiarity and personal experiences from traveling around North Africa and Western Europe, which technically prompted Roger II to commission an atlas from al-Idrisi. Now, to produce the work, al-Idrisi started gathering information for the maps by interviewing experienced travelers on their knowledge of the world, from where they have been and so on. He also ensured that only that particular part on which there was complete agreement and it also seemed credible, excluding what was also contradictory, was that most of his interviews had an element of elimination associated to it, meaning that which he could corroborate and basically could clearly be identified. So not interviewing, travelers that came and described to you an elephant as being an animal so big, it is past the wonders of imagination, stuff like that. He didn't want that kind of hyperbole. Literally, he didn't want it. Now, Roger II would also occasionally participate in some of these interviews himself, because he also reflected on his desire to compile information about his own realm. Al-Idrisi drew inspiration from a number of sources, most of which are dated to the Golden Age of Islam, as it would have been at that particular time. If you don't know, the Golden Age of Islam as well was also a particular time where they also had a lot of scholars. It was also in the period since the Romans up to a period where the Islamic world had also assisted in the mathematics, to the transference of mathematics to the Western world. As we obviously also know that much of the mathematics actually comes from India itself, and there's also a whole range, there's also a school of contribution from China, and then that obviously connected with the Middle Eastern world, specifically with the Arabic, influences in the Middle East, and from the Middle Eastern world it transferred over to the Western, much of the Western societies today. The Western societies obviously were the ones that went and put all the mathematics together, firstly to complete it in one sense, and then it went up into the various realms. For example, like Isaac Newton, that is the founder of calculus, which is advanced mathematics, basically. So the Golden Age of Islam was a period where scientific, economic, and a cultural flourishing took place in the history of Islam, traditionally dated from the 8th century to the 12th century after Christ, or the common era, as they would call it. But before we continue, we'll quickly take a short break, dear listeners.
When you choose UNAM,
you get credible accreditations.
You get internationally recognized qualifications.
You get a university with a growing reputation.
When you choose UNAM,
you get a head start on local jobs.
You become connected in a growing Namibia.
You stay in the best country in the world.
Because you already know you love it here.
Open your mind to UNAM.
And UNAM will open the world to you.
UNAM is your university, Namibia.
Because the U in UNAM is you.
When you leave school this year,
you will be part of
the biggest generation
of school leavers
ever in Namibia.
So, what are you going to do?
What legacy are you going to create?
What difference will you be part of?
Open your mind.
Open your mind to greatness. Open your mind to the best version of you.
Open your mind at UNAM. UNAM, your university Namibia. Because the U in UNAM is you.
Now we come back from the particular very interesting and also very stimulating ad break right there, because it actually reminded me once again in terms of my planning for next year. But getting back to where we left off, obviously, just as I mentioned, you know, the particular creation of the Tabula Rogeriana, which was an atlas of the known world according to Al-Idrisi, Muhammad Al-Idrisi, who was the Arabian geographer at the time, who was commissioned by the Sicilian king, Roger II. Now, obviously, as I shared in terms of the inspiration that Idrisi drew from a number of sources, and most of which are dated to the Golden Age of Islam, which was happening during the Abbasid Caliphate, and this is particularly when scholarly work was flourishing in the Islamic world. On top of this, Al-Idrisi also sent out agents to different parts of the world who were represented in his map to fact check the information given by travelers. Now, this is one of the most important things specifically in, if I can say it, like ancient cartography, is specifically the ability of the author of the specific maps, because an atlas does include a map. Of specific maps to be fact-checked. It's the single most important contributing element that helps with saying, oh wow, this is actually a mechanism that was used in the ancient world specifically to verify the information given. Now, Al-Idrisi's work was so significant, it left a specific, you know, it was a specific contribution by the from the Atlas of Islam tradition, or it was a departure from the Atlas of Islam tradition, because it moved away from a specific way in terms of what the Middle Eastern cartographers would generate information about the known world, that it actually preceded his particular work. The primary influence for Al-Idrisi's cartography is found in Arabic translations of Ptolemy's geography itself. Now, Ptolemy's geography is also something else, because Ptolemy's geography is technically the oldest map probably drawn in the known world by the Greek, one of the famous Greeks that were part of Alexander the Great's particular sort of like inner circle of most influential people, obviously in his army at the time. And the word or the name geography, which is also known by its Latin names of geographia and cosmographia, is a gazetteer, an atlas, and also a treatise on cartography, which compiled the geographic knowledge of the 2nd century Roman Empire. And it was originally written by Claudius Ptolemy in Greek in Alexandria, way before Al-Idrisi. So the subject matter of cartography is an interesting thing, in the specific reason is that us humans, we've had an innate interest and an innate desire to understand what is outside my yard, what is outside my window, what is on the other end of my street, what is in the other town 60 kilometers north of the city I live in, or what is in the other town 90 kilometers south of the city I live in. That particular indication in terms of the curiosity has what has led to humans primarily, firstly, going there, seeing, and then recording where they've been. Now, Ptolemy's geography laid out many of the principles that Al-Idrisi utilized in his particular work. Al-Idrisi also derived map-making methods from the Balkhi school of geography, which was a school that was founded during the 10th century in Baghdad under the Abbasid Caliphate. Now, it was from this particular school that he also drew the scientifically rigorous and anthropologically detailed information that he incorporated into his atlas, this particular creation. This is the Rio Chiriana that he incorporated all this extra information in. Some of the particular things that he obviously highlighted was, there's Armenia. Yes, the country of Armenia, as we know Armenia today, is shown in one of the particular illustrations that I got here open in front of me, is that Armenia is shown in the bottom center of one part of this particular atlas. Azerbaijan is in the lower left corner, and west central Iran in the upper left corner, and specifically a small portion of the Caspian Sea at the bottom left. And this particular detail that Al-Idrisi, that I'm describing to you right here, this particular detail is something that Al-Idrisi basically refined. Firstly, he got a rough sketch of the contribution by the traveler who was there. And secondly, he verified with his particular fact checkers who he sent out to go and verify whether the information was correct or not. Obviously, some of these particular things, if you had to look at the particular map today, is, you know, you would be standing there going like, was this drawn by a person or was this drawn by a 10-year-old? And this is literally what the maps looked like back then. They were drawn by hand. Obviously, some of the particular indications that a scientific eye would look for is, recognition of landmarks, recognition of certain particular names, and recognition specifically of other particular landmarks like rivers. The moment you can identify a river is the easiest particular thing that everything starts making sense from. Or the moment you can recognize a coastline on a map is the first particular indication that you'd always be able to identify a specific geographic location. Now, what Idrisi also highlighted specifically was that he also used some instruments that Roger II, the king, had created to help calculate latitudes and longitudes. This particular research process ultimately took some 15 years for Al-Idrisi also to refine. So, by 1154, just a few weeks before the king actually died, Al-Idrisi completed his atlas, producing a book with 70 sectional maps, which actually weighed 140 kilograms. 140 kilograms, specifically. The 70 sectional maps were separate, but he made 140 kilogram silver disc that was engraved with a composite world map that the 70 maps reflected or represented on that disc. This would also, the particular disc would also be known as the Nuzat al-Mushtaq, Fiktirak al-Afak, which was also basically known as the Book of Roger. The disc was made in accordance with Al-Idrisi's calculations of the circumference of the earth. Yes, in 1154, he could identify the circumference of the earth as well. This is way before Galileo, who got into an argument with the Catholic Church at the time. Galileo was also technically excommunicated. Remember, this was when Galileo told the Catholic Church, hey, listen, your scientific representation that the earth is the center of our universe is technically incorrect because I don't see any other planets revolving around us. But it seems like we might be going around the sun. And that, just that single theory got Galileo into a whole lot of cultural, religious, and societal hot water, which then obviously also meant economic hot water at the time. So, from the calculations of the circumference of the earth, this primarily led to the later creation of a silver globe with the same map engraved on it. And this is some of the unique particular aspects in terms of Al-Idrisi's contribution, because Al-Idrisi What was discovered specifically by the historians when they go look at it, when they looked at his maps, is that much of the major significance specifically of what Ali Idrisi did, it is deemed as the greatest work of geography specifically of the period, you know, of that medieval period in human history, specifically in the Mediterranean world. But you also have to understand and acknowledge that the Mediterranean world was filled with a lot of particular people moving about, trading about. They've had shared histories for thousands of years. Remember, the year 1154 is a whole thousand years after, after Christ was born. It's a whole 1,100 years. And then there's also a period before then when there were maps before Christ, of the ancient world specifically, that were also created. And obviously that highlighted Ptolemy's geography was said to be one of the most influential works that existed. Now obviously the downside was that, the discussion of the wonders of the ancient world, for example, included the Great Library of Alexandria, which was a library that Alexander the Great commissioned to be built and positioned within that city. Alexandria still exists in Egypt today, the city of Alexandria. And it was the home of the Great Library of Alexandria. And if you don't know what the Great Library was, is that it was a whole bunch of information that Alexander the Great had collected from his conquests from Greece, heading eastwards to India. He was as far as India, Alexander the Great. And these particular conquests, he discovered so much information about the world. And if you go and look at his travels on a map, it's a straight line basically. But he collected so much information, and they brought the information back, and they created this particular library. The unfortunate thing is, so much information was lost when that library was burnt down. So much information was lost. It's one of the things that many historians get, not upset, but like super sad about. I mean, there was so much information. If it survived, it would have changed the way we know this world today. Many of the scholars, obviously, as said, it hailed it as the greatest work of geography at the period. The Atlas also influenced later geographical works with techniques, inspiring maps with similar levels of precision, and obviously giving rise to an additional information sets that were also collected. But before we continue, we take another break and we come back right after it.
Großartige Neuigkeiten. Imba ist jetzt noch besser geworden. Wir haben brandneue Funktionen hinzugefügt, um dein Erlebnis noch reibungsloser, schneller und leistungsstärker zu machen als je zuvor. Bereit, das volle Potenzial von Imba freizuschalten? Erhalte alle exklusiven Funktionen für nur 36 Namibia-Dollar pro Monat oder spare noch mehr mit unserem speziellen Abonnement-Plan. 5% Rabatt bei einem 3-Monats-Abonnement, 10% Rabatt bei einem 6-Monats-Abonnement oder 25% Rabatt bei einem 12-Monats-Abonnement. Wähle den Plan, der am besten zu dir passt und genieße alles, was Imba zu bieten hat, zu einem unschlagbaren Preis. Imba, where the world congregates. Lade es herunter und abonniere noch heute.
My stone washed denim with a long crease in them and my snakeskin boots. I like my GTO down a two-lane road with an open windshield view. I'm telling the truth, baby, ain't got nothing like you. I can wear my
watch, you never watch, but nothing makes the time stop like you walking in a room. Just like the diamonds on my grill, all the way you make me feel like a special kind of fool. Yeah, it's true. Baby, they ain't got nothing on you. Time is up. All the shine of the crown might be good for looking, but when it all breaks down, oh, they ain't got nothing on you. Like a lay down style where we all hang out with the Texas barbecue. Like the sound of a song on my old guitar, laying down some 2-4-2. Yeah, it's true. Baby, they ain't got nothing on you. How are you? All the gold in the world, no, it don't mean much. Can't take you with you when your time is up. All the shine of the crown might be good for looking. When it all breaks down, oh, they ain't got nothing. You are you.
Get the meaning out of each and every song, and you find yourself a message and some words to call your own and take them home. He can make
something, but no one seems to know what it is that makes them go. Then the lights begin to flicker and the sound is getting dim. The voice begins to falter and the crowds are getting thin. But he never seems to notice, he's just got to find another place to play.
And coming back, this from the eternal classical sounds for me, primarily, of Bread with the song The Guitar Man. Yes, the band's name is Bread. Brood. Yes. Gowans. It's the band's name is Bread. So, Bread, specifically there with the timeless classic of The Guitar Man. Before that, you heard the songs of Leon Bridges with the song Ain't Got Nothing on You. And this sort of like brings us close to the, you know, midway point of this morning's session of my Sunday Morning Take. As always, you guys know, you're in my company from 5 a.m. up until 7 a.m. So, moving on from, you know, the Tabula Rogeriana specifically, we've got to obviously look at the particular history of cartography that obviously, you know, forms the basis of our discussion. I will get into the other particular four maps that we still have: the Waldseemüller map, the Fra Mauro map, the Catalan map, and the, what's this last one's name? The Cantino Planisphere. And this thing is very detailed, specifically of Africa. All of them obviously highlighting, you know, interesting and explicit contributions. I say explicit with regards to the knowledge that they encompassed or that they carried at the time. The knowledge of, how detailed the information contained within these particular documents known as maps. No, which in some cases, yes, some of the things were like, if you put all the maps together, all the pieces of the map, it would be like a 3 meter high by a 6 meter wide map. And I know a lot of us have not seen such particular works of art before. For example, if you even go to South Africa, you'll find like paintings and stuff like 6 or 7 meters high. Here, if you go to our museum, what's this, in the Independence Museum, they painted a wall. So it's technically like a mural. Like a mural, yeah. Like a mural on a wall. But I'm talking about an actual painting. A mural on a wall, you know, it doesn't actually, It looks good. I mean, some of the paintings there in that Independence Stadium, you know, they look good, but I don't know who the artist is. Primarily because, you know, there's some cases not a description. But yeah. Now, the history of cartography, obviously, in this discussion, dear listeners, is one that has obviously piqued the interest of explorers, of leaders at the time, in terms of trying to understand what is going on outside their walls, what other civilizations or communities live, wherever they might be living, and, you know, just knowing or getting knowledge of the known world around them, as obviously as they live in these particular scenarios. Now, maps have always been one of the most important human inventions, specifically as it allowed us to explain and navigate our way in and around the world. Now, if you had to ask the question in terms of when and how the earliest maps were made, there's a little bit of an unclarified, you know, an unclear scenario right there, because obviously I highlight the Tabula Rogeriana, which in the sort of like the aspect of all the maps we will have here open in front of us, some of these ancient maps, is that unfortunately it is the oldest between these five maps that I've got open in front of me. The closest would be the Catalan Atlas between 1370 or 1380, between the two decades, because even though it is dated as 1375, there's a little bit of there's a little bit of a dispute regarding whether it was created in the 1370s or in the 1380s. So the indication of the Tabula Rogeriana is specifically that the Tabula Rogeriana had detailed information about various locations, specifically on the African continent, and specifically about what we now know as Lake Victoria and Lake Albert, specifically in Sadik. Yes, in 1154, Ali Idrisi drew a detailed map of Africa way before the Portuguese even got on ships and decided to scope and scout the western coast of Africa. And the two lakes were technically only discovered by the British, expeditions, obviously, which then led to the colonization of southern Africa by the British, in majority at that particular time. Because if you go look on the maps now where Lake Albert and Lake Victoria are, I think Lake Albert is Lake Tanganyika, and Lake Victoria would be, it has a different name now, man. What's its new name? But anyway, so these particular descriptions of these two lakes technically were on the Al-Idrisi map, the map, the Rogeriana, the Tabula Rogeriana that we just completed, that we just looked at. Now, the earliest putative maps included cave paintings, obviously, and etchings on tusk and on stone. So this obviously shows to how far back humans tried to share knowledge or leave knowledge behind or record knowledge of things they've seen, places they've been, distinct geographic locations that they remember, and that this obviously had been indications of what was found in the known world. Now, the maps were also produced extensively by the ancient Babylonians, the ancient Greeks, the Romans, the Chinese, and the Indians. The earliest maps ignored the curvature, obviously, of Earth's surface, obviously, because, it was also a little bit of a scenario of trying to understand that the Earth is not flat, even though when you walk, it seems like the Earth is flat, but the Earth is not actually flat, which was also identified by a Greek scholar who could prove that the Earth is not flat. And all he did was he asked the guy to stand on the other side in another town, like 200 kilometers away. Now, both of these particular indicators, obviously, of the shape of the Earth, which was unknown at the time, and because the curvature was not important across the small areas that were being mapped, but since the age of classical Greece, maps of large regions and especially of the world used a kind of projection from a model globe to control how the inevitable distortion gets appointed or gets positioned on a map specifically. So they had to work around a way of actually saying, listen, if we know that between Windhoek and Keetmanshoop, it's technically almost 500 kilometers. We've got to show that it actually measures the 500 kilometers on the projection of the map itself. Modern methods of transportation, obviously, the use of surveillance aircraft, and even more recently, the availability of satellite imagery have made the documentation of many areas possible that were previously also inaccessible. Now you've got the free online services like Google Earth, which have made accurate maps of the world more accessible than ever before. And I actually wonder if you guys actually realize the unique contribution specifically of the Google Maps service on your smartphones and what they have actually contributed to our navigation ability wherever we go. The earliest known maps, and this is just getting through a rundown of the earliest known maps that have been discovered, have been found and identified and agreed upon that it is a map. It is not always clear, specifically whether an ancient artifact also had been actually meant to be a map or meant to be something else. But the definition also of the word map, according to the literature, doesn't seem to be precise as well. But this is also as no single artifact is generally accepted to be the earliest surviving map. But there are candidates, and the list currently is occupied by the following. Now, there is a map-like representation of a mountain, a river, valleys, and routes around Pavlov in Czechia, formerly known as the Czech Republic. And it was carved onto a mammoth tusk that had been dated to 25,000 BC. The second is an Aboriginal Australian silicon. Thought to be one of the earliest artifacts of the Aboriginal Australians. It is a specific cylindrical stone. Which tapers at one end, and it is marked with incisions. The name is obviously a shortening of the descriptive term cylindroconical stone. So it's a specific stone that obviously has a cylindrical shape to it. This particular silicon is thought to be as old as 20,000 years old, which also depicts the Darling River today found in Australia. There's also a particular artifact which is thought to be a map, which was also etched or carved into a mammoth bone at Mezgirich, and it's thought to be about 15,000 years old. Then there's also dots, yes, literal dots, dating back to 14,500 BC, that were found in the walls of the Lascaux caves, which map the Lascaux caves map, which form part of the night sky, which included the three bright stars of Vega, Deneb, and Altair, which are the summer triangle asterism. If you go look them up, in the European context, they are visible from that sky, as well as also the Pleiades star cluster. What was also discovered specifically in these caves is the Cuevas de El Castillo in Spain that also contains a dot map of the Corona Borealis constellation, which dates back to 12,000 BC as well. And yes, a map of the night sky is also information. Then you've got a polished chunk of sandstone from a cave in the Spanish Navarre, which dates back to 14,000 BC, that may be symbols for landscape features such as hills or dwellings, which were superimposed on animal etchings. Alternatively, it also probably represents a spiritual landscape or just simple incisions that were made. Then you've got the Segognole, three rock shelter in the Paris Basin of France, which is what is thought to be speculated to be a miniature representation of the surrounding landscape. It was modeled to reflect natural water flows, geomorphological features of the region, and it also could include the oldest three-dimensional map. which also dates back to 13,000 years ago, or around 12,000 to 11,000 BC, to be exact. Last two particular representations of ancient maps, which are thought to be the earliest indications of maps, is an ancient picture that resembles a map that was created in the late 7th millennium BC in Çatalhöyük, which is in modern-day Turkey, Anatolia. This wall painting represents a plan of a Neolithic village. However, according to scholars who have questioned the identification of this painting, it obviously brings the particular painting into a little bit of a disrepute in that regard. And finally, there is the Sant Bilic slab, dated between 2200 to 1600 BC, whose lines and symbols have been argued to represent a cadastral plan of a part of Western Brittany. If you don't know where Brittany is, it is on the western coastline of France, facing the Atlantic Ocean. Now, this gets us into an interesting particular talking point. And I actually want to start off with the Catalan Atlas, in terms of the next of the oldest maps known to human history. But before we continue, let's first get this caller's contribution. Eagle FM, good morning.
Yeah, good morning, my brother.
How are you doing, Angabona?
Fine, thank you. How are you too?
I'm all right.
Thank you for being there and give us the historically perspective of understanding issues. You know, people like me, I don't know whether that history that I did, of course, is... I don't know. I didn't pick up these things. Maybe it was at the very lower level. Because at the secondary school there, I did not do history. I mean, not history, but geography. But then when you now bring in issues that you are giving unto us, like they are new things to us, especially to me. And that's where now we bring in issue of our artifacts. We always hear now, and we knew now that we have the well-established library here, museum, where you can one can, you know, even some of the scholars, they are confirming that, yes, the universities, the first university actually I've had were also somewhere in South Sudan, I don't say Ethiopia, and all area there. Then when you look at the technology, because I know when you were growing up, you were even using these matches, you know the matches that you make fire? To communicate, you put a thread, ordinary thread that they use to make those women thing. So you can speak, you could communicate with somebody from that side, somewhere, you know. And not so far the distance, of course, because you know our trade, you know, have to get them very far. You cannot get them easily. But you put somebody in the corner, I don't know, maybe 500 meters away from you. Then you communicate. Now, and we are hearing that, yes, there are a lot of our information, data, that are hidden in those museums or in Europe and all over the world, I think.
Yep.
So those artifacts, and some of them were, you know, I don't know, apparently you cannot even go into their museum. It's very difficult.
I'm actually planning on, you know, trying something like that to go and see some of these ancient artifacts. Okay, I don't want to call them ancient artifacts, but things that represent a period of, for example, African history that you don't see in, like here in Namibia's national museums. You know, we don't see it here. Like recently, Angabona, I'm following the recent opening of the Maritime Museum that was opened in Lüderitz. I don't know if you heard about it.
Yeah, I've heard. Yeah. I've seen those things. They read you, yes.
Now, I want to go see that museum in terms of seeing what it has. Some of the visuals that I see, it shows, you know, animal life from the sea, like shells and various other things. But I actually want to see, you know, we take history and culture to the next level for Namibians. You see, Angabona, when you go now to London, let's say we put you on a flight to London and we tell you, Angabona, go to the oldest museum and the largest museum there in London, which contains all the known world in its four walls. Mm. So it has the Egyptology department, which is probably its strongest department, and then it has the rest of the global history aspects. Now, Uncle Bona, why do you have to fly so far to go and see history about the rest of the world, but just in one country? And that one country, Uncle Bona, describes or contains history in its limited way. The next one is for you to go to Paris, and then from Paris to, what's that massive one that I discovered back in 2023? The one in Germany, the Humboldt. Angabona, I did not know that the Humboldt is literally like number three in terms of these large repositories or depositories of human history in the world. The Humboldt University. Not university, the Humboldt Museum, which forms part of a university. Then you go to that one in Germany. And then you've got to go to the one in America. Now, Angabona, why must you fly so far to see things about the world? And when we come to our education system, and this is now where I tie in our education system and us Namibians, because I cannot defend my fellow Namibians anymore, because we don't read, Angabona. We are not curious.
Yes. That's a very big challenge. It's a very serious issue.
Yeah. We
very,
don't read.
Very serious issue.
And the second thing that backs that not reading part up is that we also don't write about Namibia. We don't write in our mother tongues. Even if we write it in English, we don't write. It's a whole bunch of people that come from other parts of the world that come write about Namibia. And then we are so surprised. Oh, wow. Look how they wrote about us. And then you go, and then 5 minutes later on, when you sit with that book in front of you, go like, but I could have written this thing also.
It's hiding the knowledge. You see what? Even just ordinary newspaper, ordinary newspaper, those journals, those whatever, anything, the culture of reading. And that's why those people, they have actually distributed themselves with all these things. Mm. So, and for you now to go there, because most of the things that are there, the information, as far as where you are now coming from now, you mentioning all these things, they are not, they might not be written here in our thing, of course, but there, all the informations are there.
Yeah.
Their informations are there. All those Egyptian parameters that we used to use, we read, we do all these things. You know, that's why, like in France, I think it's going to be easy now. One, especially scholars and those students who really want to document, do some research. Because the problem is that even just our history department and all those ones, whatever in our governance structure.
Yeah.
Because there is so much money. I used to look at where UNESCO's, where some of those big bodies, organization, those authorized ones, they are there now to also assist in disseminating the information, especially when it comes to history, this what we are talking about. Mm. So that students also, those who with the, I don't know, maybe those who have done history or social science, they could seriously go and organize themselves, get those funding through those institutions, and go and look at what is happening there in those Mizumu that you have mentioned on the universities.
Mm.
And look at it, then you come in, because these are our things that were taken here, and it's many, many years ago.
Yeah.
So the ones that we are reading here, we don't go that behind there, beyond that thing. So for us, we end up here.
I mean, Angabona, I'm reading more about in this presentation for this morning session, Angabona. This is the most interesting
That's
part.
Why I like your program. I don't like missing it. From South.
This is the funny thing about this morning's program, Angabona, is that these five ancient maps, all were interested with Africa. I don't know if you heard about Mansa Musa, Angabona.
Mansa Musa,
yeah. The Malian king who is thought to have been the richest man in human history.
Mm-hmm.
He was based in Timbuktu. Timbuktu was in Mali.
Yes.
And his illustration on one of these maps comes 10 years after the man had actually died, or like 20 years after the man had died. But the significance of his particular presence, and specifically of the West African influence on the map that was created, which is the Catalan Atlas,
yes.
Is specifically that
Catalan Atlas. That one we got to read it.
Is specifically because the cartographer, the guy who was commissioned to make this particular, map of the known world, they use the word known because it speaks to what the people of the time knew to be.
From unknown to unknown.
No, Angabona, the only information they had regarding how big the world is for them. That's why I use the word known world. So for every cartographer from Al-Idrisi in the 1100s, he could only draw a map of the world that he was described to him. And
yes.
The same for this poor, for this guy, who was a Jewish cartographer. I just want to get his, yes, his name was Abraham Kresks. Abraham Kresks. Now Kresks had to rely on three languages, Angabona. So he had to speak to Arabic travelers. He had to speak to people who could speak Hebrew like him. And he had to speak to people that could speak Latin at that time in Europe. And he relied on three language sources basically, to basically verify, corroborate, as well as also to fill in the gaps where necessary.
You see, no?
Now, in that time, a map, Angabona, took more than 10 years. For example, the first one that I started with, the Rogeriana, took literally 12 to 14 to 15 years to make. And he had to make 70 pieces. He had to break this map up into 70 pieces. So if you had to put those 70 pieces together like a jigsaw puzzle, it'll be like a whole building's floor. Or like it was like, if you put it next to each other, it'll be like a literal wall that you're building. So when we look at these things, Angabona, much of these maps were interested with us, Africa.
Yes.
We formed part of the known world.
Mm. Yes, we were known. We were known by them.
Yeah.
So now that's why I'm saying, are we saying now that there is no, like what he did and all these things, we cannot do more research and ask for permission, because the president of France was here. In fact, they made some tour, to visit all those museums in South Africa before the, so when they were waiting for the meeting for the G20 leaders meeting to take place there, summit or whatever. And he went around.
Mm.
So inside those Mandela and those ones, old ones that they have there. So, and what I'm saying is, because I'm concerned now with our documenting, our information, our knowledge. Okay. So, and we know very well that there are a lot of people who have got, who are educated, but they cannot even write their own things and say, this is what I know, this is where I ended.
Angapana, why would you throw hot water on us on something like that? But okay,
so
okay.
Because it's so painful, because all you know the history of the people, only when the those young ones now, they go there and ask. You hear, this one is Dr. So-so-so-so.
Yeah.
It's Dr. What? But I don't know. It is just very difficult because many a times, even those who could really teach us to know most of these things, of course, they have gone there. I don't know what type of institution that you can really have here to help us and our children.
All I can say, Angabwana, is that we now literally need to access libraries a lot more.
I think so.
The government has done its side. They've put these libraries in each region, and we really just have to now develop that reading culture. It's up to the parents who need to take the younger generations to libraries, teach them what a book is. Start buying books, having books in the house. Because Angabwana, I didn't need a library. I did access libraries, you know, as a younger person before, like a boy and as a teenager. But later on, you know, as you grow older, you realize you start taking interest in the books that you have at home, that your parents had been reading or that your siblings had been reading. And that is the thing. Angabwana, do you know that today, now, when I go to people's places, when people invite me to their places and stuff, I try to see if they have a bookshelf.
That's what we used to
do. I don't care in the cars, in the neighborhood where you live, whose mother or father you are, who is your mother or your father, whether you're the president or not. I don't care anymore. I go see whether the person has got a book.
I lost a lot of book in that area, in that process, my friend. I
never Angabwana, never borrow out your books. Never.
I could not write their name. I couldn't do these things. You think like you know, before you know, it's a year, a book is gone.
Yeah. Angabwana, never borrow out your books. They are treasures that you will never find again.
I'm telling you. They get lost like that.
Yeah.
Some of them was like a student. I'm doing this one side. Oh, this is leadership. So we need to seriously see, because what do you think about this? The technology has come. And of course, it is helping us to do some studies and things like that. Unlike before.
Angabwana, the technology we have today is very damaging, specifically to literacy rates.
Seriously.
The person will tell you, from the things I have seen specifically in presentations on YouTube, is that the people will describe teachers, and specifically teachers at schools, they will describe to you that the child knows everything about pop culture, you know, favorite artist, favorite song. They can sing the words. But if you ask them, okay, now write the words in the song, the child can't write, because the child doesn't read at home. Or the child...
Is that not a damage to our children?
It is.
Like you mentioned now. And how are we going to correct that deficiency?
If we start following what the Swedes and the Danes are doing, Angabwana, removing technology from the schools.
Yes.
And you keep it as basic as we grew up. You learn your handwriting. You read and write. You learn to engage with each other, meaning to talk and to have, you know, engagement in class and on the playground. And then you use your technology at home.
Use your technology. And that's why people have taken legal problems that have to now be taken at the doorstep of those big companies, technological companies, so that they can also realize, because these things have damaged so that they can also give some compensation. And we seriously, because I know if you propose that that bill here, the first people to complain will be the parents.
Of course.
The first people to complain or even take you to court is the parents.
Mm.
And these are the parents who are now, who have got, now we are now experiencing problem of crime and all this issue and things like that. Because people are not, what do I say? Because people are no longer giving the best things. Because all what they see is from there. From the internet, I mean, from the
The internet, from the TV, you name it, Angabona. You're right, Angabona. I once, if we have to look at a scenario also of society, I once asked, what was the person? Toch, it was, I think it was when it was with an indication of a lot of these parents that now rush to go pick up their children at the schools here in Windhoek. And Angabona, I don't drive between 12:30 and 2:30. I don't drive in Windhoek streets. There are certain streets that I avoid. I actually make sure I'm literally here at the office already and that I'm just, you know, finishing up preparations for the show. But you will not see me drive, Angabona. Reason being, for some reason, some of these parents, you know, obviously some parents live far away from the houses and the school is pretty far that, you know, that the child has to attend. But in some cases, Angabona, if the child is old enough to navigate, you know, to walk and to navigate the streets, what's wrong with letting the child walk home or in some cases try and take a taxi? But now the taxis have also become unsafe. I also don't know what's wrong with these taxi drivers that they are now unsafe.
Societal problem.
Angabona, these guys are really not doing any justice to themselves. Now they were the last hope, our last bastion of, you know, safe public transport. Now I'm fully I'm literally fully in the quarter of saying, listen, City of Windhoek really has to step up. They really have to make those buses of theirs drive in a circle so that people can have access to real public transport.
I think so, because not just at the one, maybe it's only have it five, and then that's all. They will not come for the second time. I think we need to seriously reorganize ourselves and do a lot. So because of our time, we will not finish with you. And I know this one is very beneficial to everyone, especially for us, because we need to know where are we going to dig the knowledge that will assist us to stand on our own. If we are to make sure that we approach those bodies, like UN bodies, who have also assisted themselves to document those knowledge and everything there. So they should also fund, through with the institution that I established, the University of Namibia and all this IUM and every institution, so that they can also, because it's not only about to now only welding and fabrication or motor mechanic
or nursing
or this other thing.
So and engineering,
they should also look at the study, the subject that he has got, that those content, so that we know ourselves and we know how to develop the really development that people are talking about. So I think those, because like I said, you know, when I began, I miss that kind of teaching there. So, and many people are missing it because they can know social study and do this history. Those who have not done history, when they go there, they just go for nursing. So what is it that, of course, I'm not denouncing that knowledge, no. But what is it that you know apart from this, you don't even know that the humanity. So hence you go there and start complaining and harassing these patients. So thank you very much, Dwight, for giving me that knowledge, my brother.
Not a problem, Angabona.
So God bless you.
You too, Angabona.
I'll keep on listening and be writing. Next time I'm going to buy my book now and start writing.
Yep, not a problem.
So
Angabona,
this is your lesson. This lesson, when it starts, that's why we want things to be done. So in a way that we can really learn. not just the, because we are being deprived of this knowledge. You understand? Very, very true. Now you are making specific effort, special effort to make sure that you prepare for the presentation and give us the real thing. Unlike where you have a system of education where, you know, it was designed to deprive us from the knowledge, from this thing. Do you understand? So now that the program have come, the country is now free, and you have programs like this in the country, educating people like this. And I'm sure even those people in Europe, they are also, their children are also writing. They say, hey, please listen to this educational. So thank you very much. We can jump up with this.
Okay, good morning. Enjoy the rest of the morning.
Cool.
Now, as you heard, dear listeners, specifically, yes, you know, we've digressed greatly, which actually leads us into our next musical break. But some of the particular key things, obviously, have been in terms of when you have to look at knowledge from previous centuries, specifically regarding what were the oldest things in terms of maps? How did we get these knowledge? How were they collected? Who were the authors? Who were the cartographers? Who were the commissioners? In many cases, the commissioners were basically, you know, kings or nobility or royalty of Europe or of other parts of the world. And much of them were trying to develop these sets of knowledge to basically go and explore. You know, based on the knowledge that someone else shared of where they were beforehand. Now, on that particular note, dear listeners, we're going to take a short musical break as promised, and we'll be back right after this.
Static white noise, submerge no choice. A lever has just given. All day, all year, too close, too near. I never wanted to listen. I don't look for congratulations or to hear the crowd applaud. It's just this reckless mind wasting time. Lost every time that I fought. With a mind full of madness and a heart full of sadness, I'll go wherever you lead. With a head full of misses, all I've never finished, the person I'll never be. Just stones in clients, way hard on this mind, pushing on doors that won't open. I've drowned out any meditation. I've been there till the air ran out. It's just this mixed up mind, wasting time, putting my decisions in doubt. With a mind full of madness and a heart. I'll go wherever you lead. With a head full of misses, all I've never finished, the person I'll never be. With a mind full of madness and a heart full of sadness, I'll go wherever you lead. With a head full of misses, all I've never finished, the person I'll never. Or to hear the crowd applaud. It's just this reckless mind wasting time.
We come back there from the sound specifically of Wham. That's before George Michael decided to say, hey, you know what, I want my solo career, and did it himself. But still, with the song Everything She Wants, please guys, I'm not there in the gender wars as the internet society, you know, is there. It's just, it's a cool song-ish situation. You know, I play cool songs on my Sunday morning sessions. But since we, just before the ad break creeps up on me, where we left off primarily with our discussion regarding ancient knowledge, specifically around geography and how you need to look at this. Oh, I forgot to add this in, specifically from the caller's contribution a little bit earlier before the musical break, is that overall, us as humans, we do have a particular aspect in terms where we are curious and we want to know about various developments around us, or try to go and see what is there in the unknown, that, you know, whether we can put some sort of a label to it to say, listen, it is now known, and we now know what occupies a specific geographic location. The indications from this has been obviously that even though the technology is there, the technology should not, you know, be a roadblock to you specifically in terms of not being able to go and visit a place. Because one of the best words of advice still exist, if you want to call yourself an adventurer, technically I view myself as a quasi adventurer, because I've seen so much. I can brag that I've seen so much of Southern Africa. And by doing it without going by plane, because by airplane is, you know, it's so expensive. Well, today it'll be expensive, obviously, because of the Iran conflict. But if you can do things by road, my guys, like I discovered just now how beautiful, basically many parts of Namibia to the south are, because I've seen so many parts here heading northwards and westwards and eastwards of Namibia. It's been a long time since I've gone south, even though I am technically from the south. But in that scenario, before the ad break, we'll be coming back right after that, heading into like the last particular leg of this morning's session of my Sunday Morning Take.
Get ready to embrace a world of possibilities at the University of Namibia, with a community of ambitious students, researchers and innovators. Shape your future with a wide range of programs in agriculture, engineering, natural sciences, commerce and management, law, education, human sciences, health sciences or veterinary medicine. Apply online at unam.edu.na. UNAM, open your mind.
For some reason, I'm starting to think now that the particular, I don't want to say educational ads that I've had now for this morning session, but they somehow do actually fit actually in with a little bit of a take that I gave just before the ad break itself regarding human knowledge and knowledge in society and being curious about the world around you. And it also shouldn't be a scenario, dear listeners, where you should be held back primarily, for example, by, you know, whatever your life might be, even if it means by walking. I mean, there's a guy, he is, I think he's from Kietmanswip, but you guys have seen him here in Windhoek specifically. It's a guy that walks around with the cross on like two wheels, and he sometimes leaves it at certain intersections here in the city. I think that guy walked from Kietmans or from Ludritz, one of the two towns. He walked all the way from there to here. So, just so that you know, it shouldn't be a mission about, you know, when you look at your where your life is personally for you, that you shouldn't have the opportunity of seeing your own country. You shouldn't have the opportunity of experiencing another place. You can walk it out. I preferably would really want the caliber of politicians we've got in this country to actually get a software update of some kind to think, you know what? Improve on our public improve on many public service elements, specifically public transport. We were supposed to have already a commuting train. There was no way that cars would become cheaper, guys. There was no way in this world that cars would become cheaper. No way. Rising population doesn't also always means that we will be able to continuously earn more to earn more from salaries and wages. No. So it's about time we start looking at the world around us and primarily things about, you know, that we can effect to bring the necessary, to relieve the necessary burdens, for example, like transport and all those other particular aspects. But where I left off, and I'm quickly just gonna round out some of these ancient maps that form unique particular points in human history in terms of cartography and what it now means for us. So I'm starting with the Catalan Atlas, because the Catalan Atlas, as I described in the Corus contribution, was commissioned also by a king. It is known as the Atlas Catala, or the Eastern Catalan, which is a map basically of the medieval world at the time. And it was created between 1370 or 1380. And it's often conventionally dated at 1375. And it has been described as the most important map in the Middle Ages in the Catalan language. If you don't know where Catalan comes from, it is in northern Spain. It's the actual hub of Catalonia, which is in northern Spain, is Barcelona. Now, it was produced by a Jewish cartographer by the name of Abraham Kresks. And he was also the leader of the Majorcan cartographic school, who was described by a contemporary as a master of maps, as well as of compasses, and also basically of illuminated manuscripts. Now, if you don't know what an illuminated manuscript is, it's a particular document. Which is a formally prepared document where the text is decorated with flourishes such as borders and miniature illustrations. So it basically was also kind of a graphic designer. Don't worry. They didn't have graphic designers back then, but they had people that literally are doing what graphic designers do today. Now, the particular map itself, the Catalan Atlas, was in the Royal Library of France by 1380, during the reign of the French King Charles V, and it is still preserved in France in the Bibliothèque Nationale de France. Now, the Catalan Atlas originally consisted of 6 vellum leaves. This means primarily that they were made on, you know, it's a kind of a leather document. It's a document made from animal leather, which was used as a kind of writing material. This is obviously the best manner in terms of preserving the actual content that is documented on this particular piece. So it wasn't just paper that would sort out to be the various kinds of elements to store information. Think of this as, instead of you having the book, think of this as the soft copy on the computer, because the material that was needed to store this information also needed to last a long time, because they obviously knew about the weaknesses of their paper manufacturing at the time. If you look at paper manufacturing today, I even heard yesterday when I quickly went to, you know, get some food at a local retailer, I browsed through one of the shops here in Morua Mall, and I heard the shop attendant tell the lady, listen, if you do a lay-by with us, take a photo of your receipt as it currently is with its ink and everything, because the ink fades on the receipt. And the customer said, okay, all right, I'll do that. Because they literally advised on the best course ahead, because obviously a lay-by is something that you have to do over 3 months, if you guys did not know this. So in that scenario, you can obviously see what some of the problems specifically with paper. Even though I told you that ink and paper is better than a computer, it still is. It still is the most reliable piece of technology that exists. A pen and a paper. Piece of paper. Just letting you know. But on that note, dear listeners, heading into the last 8 minutes for this morning's session, the next particular ancient map was the Waldseemüller map. Now, it came out in April 1507, and it was developed by a German cartographer by the name of Martin Waldseemüller. And he is identified as possibly the first person to have given America its name, America. And it's, I'm talking about from North, Central to South America. Before Amerigo Vespucci actually got to America. If you don't know who Amerigo Vespucci is, it is, it has been debated or has been suggested by other historians, prior to today's particular engagement between you and me, that, the name for America comes from this Italian, explorer, Amerigo Vespucci. Oh, it's interesting. If you guys go and look at the names of places, the histories are wonderful. But anyway, so it came out in 1507. The name America is placed on South America, specifically on the main map. And, it was also obviously a name that was bestowed upon that particular part of the world by this particular explorer. The map was drafted on a modification also of Ptolemy's second projection, which expanded to accommodate the Americas and high altitudes. A single copy of the map survives still, and it's presently housed in the Library of Congress in Washington, D.C., which is basically a library. Waldseemüller also created globe gores. These are printed maps that are designed to be cut out and pasted onto spheres to form globes of the world. Now, the wall map and his globe gores at the, of the same date depict the American continents in two pieces. These depictions differ from the small inset map on the, primarily that was developed by him. That is literally in the top corner, in the top border of the wall map, which shows the two American continents actually joined by an isthmus. Now, if you don't know what an isthmus is a small piece of land. It literally looks like a land bridge. But Central America is not a land bridge. I'll tell you today, it's not a land bridge. Technically, you can think of it as a land bridge, but it's not a land bridge. It is a land bridge, but it's not a land bridge. Because it's identified as a continent. Central America. And then getting into the Frau Mauro map. The Frau Mauro map is a map of the world made around 1450 by the Italian cartographer Fra Mauro, who is considered the greatest memorial of medieval cartography. Now, this map is super confusing. If you've ever seen an illustration of this, of the Fra Mauro map, I don't know what I'm looking at, to be honest with you. Because the map depicts Asia, Africa, and Europe with the south specifically at the top. Now you have to ask yourself, the south of what? The south of what? Because the map I'm looking at, I don't know what I'm basically looking at. I can't even identify which part is the Mediterranean Sea. No, I see the Mediterranean. Oh, it's upside down. Okay, that's okay. All right. So I can see Italy from here, but everything is technically upside down. You can see what looks like the Baltic Sea, where the Scandinavian countries are. You can see Africa, but for some reason Africa is weirdly designed. But I can't see Madagascar. You can see where the what's this thing's name? The Suez Canal today would be. And yeah, and even the Strait of Hormuz, don't worry, guys. You even see it there. And so this particular map, even though it was designed literally upside down for our eyes, is a circular planisphere that was drawn on parchment. Now, a planisphere is a star chart analog that helps to compute that is technically a computing instrument in the form of two adjustable disks. So obviously this particular map was obviously also used to serve a different function as well. It includes Asia, the Indian Ocean, Africa, Europe, and the Atlantic Ocean. And obviously the map is usually on display in Venice in Italy at the Biblioteca Nazionale Marciana. So the Fra Mauro map, world map, is a major cartographical work, because it took actually seven years for the cartographer to develop. And it was also deemed at the time to be very expensive to produce, because the map contains hundreds of detailed illustrations and more than 3,000 descriptive texts. It was also the most detailed and accurate representation of the world that had been produced up until that particular time, which was 1450. And also, the Fra Mauro map was considered one of the most important works in the history of cartography, because one historian highlighted that it was the beginning of the end of early medieval map making that reflected biblical geographical teaching. So in that scenario, it actually advanced the map making discussion forward. Finally, we get into the Cantino planisphere. The Cantino planisphere technically looks like the map that you see today in front of you. Why? Here's a funny thing that the Cantino planisphere does. The Cantino planisphere basically makes a suggestion that there is another ocean on the other side of Asia. Why do I say this? It is obviously a map made that was commissioned by the Portuguese. It's currently preserved in Italy in the city of Modena. And it's named after the cartographer, someone who smuggled the map from Portugal to Italy in 1502. Because at that stage, having a map, my guy, on you, and you are not a representative of that country, it was high-level espionage, and it was in many cases also the necessary reason to be executed. So it's named the Cantino planisphere because the guy who literally smuggled it, or basically stole it, Alberto Cantino, was an agent for the Duke of Ferrara, who obviously smuggled a particular map out. Now, the planisphere is the earliest surviving map that shows Portuguese geographic discoveries in the East and the West, and is particularly notable for portraying a fragmented record of the Brazilian coast, because I can see it right here in front of me, which the Portuguese explorer Pedro Álvares Cabral had explored in 1500, 2 years prior to its actual smuggling. Now, the southern coast of Greenland, studied in the late 1490s, and the African coast of the Atlantic and Indian Oceans with remarkable accuracy and detail, because Africa is pretty detailed on this map. It is literally detailed. Now, it was also valuable at the beginning of the 16th century because it showed detailed and up-to-date strategic information when geographical knowledge of the world was growing at a rapid pace. Now, it still remains important even today because it contains unique historical information about the maritime exploration and the evolution of nautical cartography during the Age of Discovery. Now, the Cantino planisphere is the earliest extant nautical chart that depicts places in Africa and parts of Brazil and India according to their latitudes. Now, on that particular note, dear listeners, it does bring us up to the end for this morning's discussion here on your number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM. This is my Sunday morning take. We'll take a quick musical break. We're past the top of the hour at 7 a.m. And on that other side, we'll say our goodbyes and lead you into the rest of your programming for this morning.
Hotel suite, can you live there? so long. It's kind of strange now you're gone. I'm not sure if I should show you what I found. Has it gone for good, or is it coming back around? Isn't it hard to make up your mind when you're losing and your fuse is fireside? All those places we used to go, and I suspect you already know. But that place on memory lane you like still looks the same, but something about it's changed. I'm not sure if I should show you what I found. Has it gone for good, or is it coming back around? Isn't it hard to make up your mind when you're losing and your fuse is fireside? And I thought I was yours forever. Or maybe I was mistaken, but I just cannot manage to make it through the day without thinking that you were lately.
We come back there from the sounds of the Arctic Monkeys with the song Fireside. And just before that, you had a little bit of, once again, Wham! Before George Michael went solo with Club Tropicana. And this ultimately does bring us up to the end for this morning's session, dear listeners. Stay tuned for the rest of your programming after the musical break or after the music. And we'll see each other again, same time, same place next week, Sunday. Alternatively, you can still find me during the course of the week here on your number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM, on The Home Run, where Helmut and I obviously go through dissecting some of the major talking points that you can't always dissect, you know, in other formats. On that note, stay tuned for the rest of the programming and enjoy the rest of your Sunday programming in our company.